This is CliffCentral.com.
Yes, good morning, everybody. It's stuck into my first cup of coffee for the day. It might be the only one today. It's become like a bit of a nunu blanket for me. It's like a, especially because we've now got decent coffee here, it makes a huge difference. So now it becomes like a ritual for me almost, like, well, I have to do it.
It's nice because it kind of smells good, right? In the past, with a cup of brown, it smelled like you did a no-no in your penteria. And that's a horrible way to start the day for anybody involved. Anybody.
God, talk about a no-no in my pant area. That's hilarious. I had a really itchy ass yesterday, and I can't figure out what.
Really? Was it warmer than usual?
I don't know.
Itchy swallows?
It was just very embarrassing. This is the first time I've mentioned it to another human being. I felt I could be honest with you, Ben.
Well, it's okay, Gareth. I should be on air already.
Yeah, well.
Okay, well, it's out there. Everyone gets itchy asses.
Sure.
I had one, I think, about 10 days ago.
Yeah, and you worry. I mean, like, I always jump to the nth degree of conclusions. Like, if I have a slight headache, I think, oh, God, it's definitely brain cancer this time.
Yeah, this is the one.
An itchy ass, and you're like, oh, God, there's probably some hideous disease growing in that area.
Worms.
No, it was fine. Worms. Oh, my God.
Those still a thing?
Yeah, worms and piles. Those have always been my biggest fear because my mother used to give us deworming tablets when we were children.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was us and the dogs. Children and dogs line up. I mean, we didn't have the same. Maybe we had the same. I don't even know.
Only had time to go to the vet, so this is what we got this year.
Yeah. This is what you got, kids. Just eat them up. Here, this is chewable. Mmm. Worms, it's still very much a thing. I mean, we all have worms in us, right?
Yeah.
No matter how much you try to clean those things out, there's tapeworms and God knows what else that live inside you. It freaks me out to even think about it, so the less I think about that, the better. And the other thing that they put the fear of God into me about was piles. Now, to my complete understanding and knowledge of what piles are, I've never had them. But I was put into...
I think you would know if you've had them, right?
I know. You'd feel them. I think they're very painful for people who have them. Anyway, I don't know what they are because I've never had them. And when I was younger, our mother, my brother and sister and I, we were told, don't sit on a cold surface because you'll get piles.
Yeah, I was
just told
that.
That's true. Is that true?
Not, I don't think completely technically correct, but not advisable to sit on cold surfaces.
Sure, but I mean, are you going to get... Where's a doctor when we need one? We've got so many doctors who listen to us. I got a nice email interview. Got an email here from Taryn Turner. She's a doctor. We got Jonathan Witt who listens to us, and we've got a bunch of others too. So we get medical advice immediately whenever we ask for it on the show, which is terrific.
Well, essentially, piles is enlarged blood vessels.
Oh, my God.
That you get inside and around your anus.
Oh.
So it's just like, again, okay, I'm just going out on a limb here. But from a cold surface would make things contract.
Mm.
Piles is when things are expanding.
Yeah.
And I would guess it's a stress-related kind of thing or complications, but it's more of a push than a pull.
Hey, Gord, have you ever had piles?
No, sadly.
Oh, okay.
Kalani did once.
Who?
Your friend Kalani had piles? Just get in front of the microphone.
Sorry, I am busy arriving.
Yeah. Gord has
Gord's arrived in life and in the show.
Something about an elastic. He had to have an elastic band.
Put around
the pile.
Oh,
and
sweet
so it
Jesus.
Could like lose blood flow and then eventually die and fall off him.
Oh, jeepers.
So it's terrible.
But the thing is, you leave the house knowing that. That's going to change the way you approach every conversation in
life.
Here
we go. Got another doctor
and
who listens
sit
to
on
us.
A donut
Hang on.
Thing.
Here's another doctor. Cold floors do not make piles.
There we go.
See, so another old wives' tale. Thank you very much. There's Dr.
I know some young wives who believe that.
Let me give credit where it's due here. Dr. Cousins. There are lots of doctors who listen to us. I love it.
With a PhD in ass.
PhD in ass.
I've always wondered about that. Like, okay, so for doctoring, you have to do like many years of general doctoring.
Yes.
And then you can be a GP or you can go and study further and be like a neurologist or a urologist.
Some kind of specialist.
He's like, okay, guys, I got the highest marks. I can choose. The door is open
I'm
for me.
Choose
the world's
about proctology.
I'm going to be an ass doctor. And not just noughts, men's noughts. And not just men's noughts. Men's noughts. adults that are in proper fucking trouble. Bad ones. And I'm going to spend the next 40 years of my life it's looking like at just, bad men's noughts.
You've just recited their oath of office, really. That's it. I hereby declare that I shall
dedicate the rest of my life to men's noughts. The worst of the worst.
Yeah, you've got to be a special kind of person. Listen, it's also if you go into gynecology or obstetrics, I mean, again, these are not your children. This is not your wife's vagina.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a thing to have someone else have to reveal herself to you with all kinds of problems.
You've got two kinds of vaginas you're going to be dealing with. Okay, checkups aside.
Sure.
You've got two kinds of vaginas you're dealing with. Birthing vaginas and bad vaginas. Mm-hmm. Like, my vagina is in some trouble.
Right.
Come and look at it.
Wow.
There's stuff happening.
But I also reckon, like, doctors are so desensitized to all this kind of stuff.
I think they are, yeah. They don't care.
Well, that's the point. Why do you want to deal with so many bad noughts that they no longer faze you at all?
But, Gord, the thing is, it's just an area of expertise to them. Like, we look at it as, like, as a nought or whatever.
Oh, sweet Jesus. I just got a whole lot of info about these piles. You want to hear about them?
Oh, yeah. I'm glad I arrived for the piles talk.
All right. First thing in the morning, everybody, while you're getting ready, having your breakfast. Classification system for external hemorrhoids. Okay? Grade 1 hemorrhoids are visualized on anoscopy and may bulge into the lumen, but do not prolapse below the dentate line.
Oh, just those words enough.
When you're prolapsing past your lumen.
I hate it when I prolapse past the lumen, man.
Grade 2 hemorrhoids prolapse out of the anal canal with defecation or with straining, but reduce spontaneously.
So you get a little pile and then it chills out.
Grade 3 hemorrhoids prolapse out of the anal canal with defecation or straining and require manual reduction.
Now that's your mate's elastic.
Or maybe just pushing it back into your nought.
Grade 4...
Can't put the genie back in the bottle.
Can't put that genie back in the bottle. Grade 4 hemorrhoids are irreducible and may strangulate.
That you get strangled by your hemorrhoid. What does it reach up out of your nort, grab you by the throat, and hemorrhoid you to death?
I never want to know about this. Please, dear Lord God, I'm going to become a good religious person from today if you promise me you'll never give me hemorrhoids.
What do you get them?
Strangulators to
prevent. I bet you would not still. You would not make that deal.
Strangulators to prevent circulation of the blood supply through a part of the body by constriction.
That's the elastic band around the pile.
Like, that's like what happens with a hernia.
Yeah, elastic band around the pile.
So basically, I just want to know how you always prevent this. If it means getting up a little bit earlier to do your pile stretches or...
Do we have any cause and any prevention information?
Don't strain. Don't stress. This is very bad.
Don't have a tight knot.
Okay.
Like, just chill, relax.
Loosen your knot.
Like if you're very stressed, you know, people get like neck pain in times of stress.
Oh yeah.
If you get stressed around the body, I think that's where you.
So don't hold your stress in your nort.
Destination pile town.
All right. You know what? This is too much information.
It's been a great morning
so
far.
By the way, this is why you do not go on the internet like I just did and look stuff up, because I'm not a doctor, and then I get panicky about stuff, and it's just not a good idea. Anyway, all right. I was thinking about podcasts yesterday. Because Ben and I listen to tons of them, and Gord listens to tons of them, and I've written 100 articles about podcasting because we've been doing it now 5 years. And I got into a conversation with someone yesterday about how podcasting is really a university for free for adults.
Yeah.
On the most amazing and varied topics. I mean, just now we were talking piles, but obviously we're not experts. And what we'll do probably is get an expert in now. And then we will be smarter about these things going forward.
It's piles of knowledge is what we'll get.
Like later on today, we've got this dude who Ben has been following around. He's a fat guy, and Ben has been following him around. He's been doing like running and all kinds of things to try and lose the fat. He's been doing this regimen of like certain kinds of exercise and eating and all sorts of. He's got a biokineticist, and his name is Hobbo. And if you've seen the videos on Ben's page and on social media generally, you'll know who I'm talking about. He's going to pop in a little bit later on. He's 33 years old. He was 130 kilograms in September of 2018. He's now down to 105. I know you've lost a few kilos already, and you're on this regimen.
I'm like that person running the comrades that just hit the first Oros ladies. Like, it feels like a big milestone, but there's still 80 Ks of comrades to go. I'm down just short of 15.
15, Gord, that's good.
That's really
so between you and Hobbo, we've got Sia. basically.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Sia's not here because he's sick. I sent him home yesterday. He was sitting in his office going, you know, he's now got an office. Sia's.
And he's just going loud enough for you to notice and ask.
No, but no, he doesn't go. He goes, and then if no one pays attention, he gets louder and louder until someone
we
does.
Love Sia, and he's suffering pain, and I wish I could just cuddle him, hold him close.
But I do like
some
the
Luther Vandross.
I do like the fact that at 3:50 a.m. he messaged us to say, "Guys, I'm really not feeling great. I shall not be coming in."
Well, good for him
he
that
still phoned me with a wake-up call.
Then he still phoned you with a wake-up call.
Yeah, at 5 on the dot. Him and my alarm clock at the same time. I can't tell if it's ringing or alarming. It's both at the same time.
But the point I wanted to get to with podcasting is that there are very few people in South Africa who are comprehensively literate and numerate and can write properly, right? I mean, read and write, understand, comprehend. We can see this because people come out of school and they go to university and they can't deal with the basic curriculum of the courses they're doing at university because it requires them to read and write properly, which, honestly, South Africa has the lowest levels of literacy on the continent. And this is a study that's already 10 years old. But so I don't think we've got better. I think we've got worse.
There's two levels of that to me. Like someone who hasn't had access to literacy, that's a massive problem. It's a human rights violation.
No,
that person cannot be – that person and deserves an apology from the universe. But if you got an education, especially if you finished school or even got into high school and you can't use an apostrophe and you don't have dyslexia, you must just get punched in the head.
Mm. Well, you know what, Gord? Here's where I'm getting at with podcasting. So I had this conversation with a client yesterday. And I was explaining to them that even though we have people who are largely illiterate and can't really deal with the printed word, the written word, they can still understand by hearing. And usually they understand that better.
And people who are good at podcasting tend to be compelling, be able to give a compelling explanation and are kind of articulate.
Well, the ones whose podcasts are successful.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're orators, and there are a few, right?
Yeah.
Orators, what they're called.
Well, they're
isn't
they're
an orator someone that gives like a live speech?
Yeah, an orator is a speaker of any kind. They're articulate. I mean, like most people who put a good podcast together are not bumbling, mumbling.
No, they're interesting to listen
Otherwise,
to.
Why would their podcast take off?
You know? Well, and they've got confidence about what they're saying as well, like us. We're confident we are.
So here's what I'm trying to get.
We can't back it up, but we're confident about it.
So the point is, after a very long and varied and complicated conversation, which doesn't really belie my articulate or inarticulate abilities, we eventually get to this conclusion that actually the best way for South Africans who are unemployed but have a basic education, thanks to Angie Mocheha, very basic, is that they can listen to great podcasts and they can upskill themselves and they can learn about the world around them. And I mean, I know this is to be the truth.
Absolutely, dude.
Because we've got one listener who's been there from the get-go. He's a super fan of ours. His name is Mfundo. He's by no means illiterate. And he's by no means uneducated. In fact, he's now an educator. So he teaches people. But what Mfundo said to me in an email about 1.5 years into cliffcentral.com is that he feels we get people in here. And this is true for me. I mean, I invite people into the studio who I'm interested in.
That you can learn from.
Who I'm fascinated by, who are much cleverer than me. And then I absorb. It's like a private university lecture. And if you think about it that way, it's free. You don't have to go to the campus. You don't have to be put up in a hostel. You don't have to pay fees. You don't have to buy textbooks.
Books that you can't afford.
You don't have to panic if you miss two or three lectures in a row because they start at 7 a.m. You don't have to worry about the exam because what you don't pick up, you don't pick up. And that's true for varsity anyway. I mean, you could write an exam. It doesn't mean you remember a damn thing afterwards. What you learn here is the stuff you want to learn, and you learn about it in a way that is – what we're used to as human beings.
And it tends to be practical knowledge. I mean, at the least, it's interesting and not just pointless and irrelevant. It tends to be practical knowledge. People's experience usually comes from some form of practical application, like they've done it. They're not just a scholar of
it. Well, this is it.
And nothing wrong with scholars of things.
And we talk theory here a lot of times, and especially when we're in the political arena. But then I think we also have lots of people with life stories that are essentially your practical courses.
Sure.
So you have your theory, which is, you know, this is what's going on in the news. This is what the political parties believe. This is what – and I'm just talking about politics now, but this goes for any subject. And then you got the practical side of it, which is here's a guy who grew up in whatever part of the country, this is his experience of politics, and this is where it's made a difference or not in his life. And then you look at those two together, and you learn something. And you go, right, based on that, this is how I interpret politics in South Africa. And it could go for science or technology or for literature or for anything else.
I watched a really interesting video podcast. This character, Theo Von, he's very funny. And he's got a couple of podcasts he does with other people, but his own private one is called This Past Weekend with Theo Von. And he had Jordan Peterson on. So now you got this really funny guy, and obviously Jordan Peterson, intellectual, who can crack a joke, but that's not his shtick. And Jordan Peterson said something along the lines of, like, the podcasting revolution and things like YouTube and audio players and whatever, they have freed the spoken word. So you always had radio broadcasting, well, not always, but for a long time you had radio broadcasting, and that was based on locality, certain times you could listen. You couldn't, it had to be done in real time, and unless you stuck a tape cassette in your
right.
Audio player.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, like, the conversation is accessible to so many more people, and it's accessible when you want.
But think about it in this country, what that means. Because the big picture that I'm getting at is that we have an ability here through podcasting and obviously audiobooks to a degree as well.
Yeah, that's huge for me.
But podcasting, especially because it's conversational. A book is a book. It's unchangeable. It doesn't lead in directions that are unpredictable.
Yeah.
Usually
a conversation between multiple people.
And we're talking about nonfiction, which is very unpopular in South Africa.
Love that shit.
People don't like nonfiction. Unfortunately, if you go to a bookstore and you see how much space they dedicate to cooking books, religious books, and fiction, and then you add up all the space that nonfiction takes up,
yeah,
it's like a tiny, tiny proportion.
People don't mind an autobiography or a biography, but that kind of straddles a gray area between fiction and nonfiction, because it's like my story as told by me for my benefit.
Truth.
Or let's villainize the book of villainizing person X.
Correct. So I think there's a possibility that a lot of very smart people will gain knowledge and will learn and educate themselves by podcasting.
There is also a risk of misinformation. A lot of people are highly opinionated about shit they don't know about.
Oh,
and you could listen to the Bermuda Triangle podcast religiously.
But is there any less danger if you go to a university in South Africa and you're propagandized by a professor who's got a certain political bent?
No. I'm not necessarily comparing the risk of that. I mean, in certain academic fields, it is very kind of objective, like for me, science and that kind of thing. But there's always an opinion aspect, especially things like history and political science and psychology, that kind of thing. It's all interpretive. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I'm just saying that I'm just saying you get bullshit out there.
Sure, and credulous people will fall for it, and people who demand a higher level of evidence will not. Yeah. But that's going to happen anyway. It's going to happen in business.
That's one to look out for. Don't believe everything you hear. It used to be don't believe everything you read. Now it's just like don't believe everything.
Isn't it great, though, that what we've got essentially is that we've got the widespread distribution of the spoken word.
Yeah. That was what Jordan Peterson was basically saying.
As opposed to what we had before, which was just the widespread distribution of
the written
word.
And there's permanence now to the spoken word. And you were saying how the conversation is spontaneous, it's fluid, it adapts, you've got different personalities kind of interacting with each other.
We're kind of preaching to the choir, because people who listen to podcasts and listen to this show, this show's weird. It kind of straddles this space between
crap talking and being informed.
Well, we're a podcast, but we're actually a live show as well. And you know, I was at a point 2 years ago, I don't know if this is interesting to anyone, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Point 2 years ago where I was like, we either have to go completely podcast and we record the show at some point in the day and just play it out live whenever, or we have to stay live and have this podcast element as kind of a bonus. And what has happened, if we look at the statistics, is people are overwhelmingly listening to us on podcasts whenever it suits them, right?
Yeah.
Which is great.
Not surprising, really.
So I've then had to adapt, and I hope it isn't annoying to you, when I say things like good morning, because you might be listening in the afternoon, or I tell you what the date is, But these are kind of things that I'm really trying hard to get rid of that I've been doing for 20 years.
It contextualizes the performance.
Wow. Performance.
I mean, look at me, gravelly. We're here in the first thing in the morning.
And it's like this was the talk at that time when this news event happened.
It's like Gareth talking about his cup of coffee this morning. Straight away, first thing.
So okay, Sean says with podcasts.
Not from you necessarily.
Sean says, with podcasts, YouTube, and the internet, I'm sure you'll get a better education than you would at some South African universities. I was thinking about this yesterday. Getting a degree is so much more accessible than when I finished school in 2001. Yes, it is, but you've also got to ask yourself. I mean, one of my friends qualified as a doctor of law the other day. Do you know what a big deal that is?
That just sounds like you want to make both of them more difficult.
It's just it's the most amazing thing that this friend of mine who... Like, we sit and talk shit to each other, and he's now an LLD. He's a doctor of laws. Do you know what a big deal that is? I was so impressed with this. But that's the kind of thing that universities can do once you've got a bachelor's and a master's. And that's where they will always be useful, as places of research and places of a publication of higher thinking.
Peer-reviewing stuff.
Absolutely. But Sean's saying is not wrong. It is easier to get into university now than ever before, and it should be. It shouldn't be something that's only for a few people. And what I'm saying is that you don't even need that degree. Most people don't look at your credentials. They really don't.
No, they look at your experience.
Right. A good employer will look at your personality, your character, your attitude, your experience, and then they'll look at your qualifications. I mean, who has a university degree? You have one, Gord? You have one. Right. So.
Well done, Gord.
Thanks. I was asked a question.
It hasn't really been.
I did learn a lot. Like, I really did. I learned a lot. I can't deny that. Like, my degree was quite practical, and like, I'm happy I did it. But I know some of it is waffly bullshit.
So Lubabalo says, just like me, I failed grade 12. Now I run a spaza shop. One wouldn't tell that I listen to smart shows like this. I'm not a smart person, but this show made me a bit clever. Well, I tend to disagree. I mean, here you are messaging us at, 6:20 in the morning, while you're probably getting your shop opened. You're multitasking the hell out of this morning, and you've started your own business. That is a kind of smart that you can't get from universities.
And learning, well, hopefully, learning some shit while you do other shit.
And you know what else is interesting about education? And I only, this dawned on me much later in life, but you don't actually need to learn the specifics of a profession unless that is your career and that's the only thing you're interested in. Like, if you're a medical doctor, you do need to know the specifics of everything that you're doing, and you need to have practical experience. You need to probably go and, you know, cut up a cadaver every
otherwise you're a mommy blogger with an opinion about bullshit herbs that don't do anything.
Sure, but let's say you're interested in medical science because that's your job, but you're also really fascinated by engineering or by architecture or by craft beer making.
Well, that's me. I love space and physics, and I know you love chemistry. I mean, you're not a qualified chemist, and you're probably not going to, who knows, but you're probably not going to go on to do your professorship.
No.
But you can learn about that stuff completely accessibly via the internet. I mean, I don't profess to be like an academic on space and science, but I'm just fascinated by it.
Why do people, for example, accept this completely when it comes to cooking? Like, you'll watch a show like MasterChef where you've got these people who are – they actually do this for a living every day, and they make these dishes that are supposedly internationally famous and taste like unicorn turds mixed with, you know, the teardrops of a griffin. The most amazing meals in the world. But everybody will go into the kitchen and play around with the same recipe and think that they are comparable. And there's nothing wrong with that.
You can experiment with it.
You're not going to be held to the standard that a doctor will be held to if they.
Oh no! If you bugger up the souffle, you're not gonna get flayed for souffle.
Right.
Yeah.
And this should go for your interest. So if Gord's interested in space, he can learn about space, and he can become as knowledgeable as possibly as knowledgeable as someone who's qualified in, you know, astronomy and. The birth and death of stars and the kind of specific gravity that you'll experience on the surface of a planet in the outer rim of this.
They just photographed for the first time the event horizon of a black hole.
It's not a spectacular looking photo because it's literally a picture of nothing, and then there's some peripheral something on the outside. But they've observed and photographed the predicted behavior of a black hole using one of the big ass telescopes that have gone up now. VAST, I think. No, that's actually on Earth. Anyway, one of the floating telescopes that's gone up in the last few years that's very powerful. They managed to actually, yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. We started with piles, we ended in the black hole. It really was. It's full circle.
That's what you call full circle.
Full circle half hour right there. Full circle.
All right, well, let's end it there, but you get the point. Let's check out some news. How about that? Apparently, the Gangster State book launch has been disrupted by protesters.
Ah, sure.
Yeah. What knowledge that counteracts the agenda we'd like to have?
Well, here it is. You know, in a country, and I believe that Ace Magashule's supporters in the ANC Youth League in the Free State are planning a book burning ceremony.
Ooh, that's unprecedented.
So where they burn books, they'll eventually burn humans. I don't know who said that, but it's a quote that I've read often.
You've got to ask the question.
If you ever needed proof that this was this man, Ace Magashule, is a gangster, and the people who follow him are part of his gang, then these two stories, the fact that there's going to be a book burning, which is likely to happen today, apparently, and that the launch of the book in Sandton City was disrupted by gangsters, that proves precisely Peter Louis Myberg, the author of the book's point.
It's good PR for the book.
It's great for the book. And remember, if you're going to burn books, you have to buy them first.
Yep.
So that's great news.
Burn two.
There we go. Buy them all up. Use your minimum wage, you losers in the Free State.
And the rest of us will get the Kindle version or the audio book and just listen to it anyway.
On a slightly separate note, if you have Youth League anything on your CV, you're a complete and utter no hire, right? Just think of all the things you can do when you're young. You choose to be part of a political youth league.
Yeah.
There is no hope for you in life. There really isn't. You are just basically saying, hi, I'm going to waste my whoever
it's
I
like
am.
It's like being Westboro Baptist Church.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, if you were a deacon in the Westboro Baptist Church, I'm unlikely to give you a job.
Yeah.
For all the obvious reasons.
Are they worse than the East Bros?
Yeah, they're the west side of the bro is the ones, worse. They're the ones that think God hates everyone.
Mm, except them.
Yeah.
Which is very convenient. Anyway, so Ace Magashule...
God does that, hey?
Very selective.
Always digs his supporters.
Protesters have been tearing up copies of the controversial book, which claims to expose the network of state capture under African National Congress Secretary General Ace Magashule. Myberg says it's disappointing. I did expect that there would be people in attendance who are critical of the book, but what is disappointing is that once again a democratic stage was disrupted through undemocratic means. National Marketing and Publicity Manager for Penguin, Amanda van Rijn, adds, the discussion had just started and a bunch of people started screaming about 30 minutes ago and they're still going. Well, you see, look.
Screaming.
This does tell you a lot about the state of mental health of the people who are following someone like Ace Magashule. And I mean no disrespect by observing this as objectively as possible. If there are a bunch of people talking about a book in a civil discourse, asking questions to the author, you know, interrogating the subject matter, taking a real interest in it. And then there are a bunch of people who are screaming and tearing things up.
Preventing the conversation.
I do have to question, like, the mental health of these people. It's not just, this is not an intelligence thing. It's not necessarily about democracy. I think what you've got to go straight to is, why is your life so horrendous that the only means for you to express yourself is to scream and tear things up? There's something terrifically disappointing about that.
And you see a microcosm of it from all walks of life, at all kind of levels of income, at all ethnicities and political backgrounds of people on social media or any internet thing where there's comments. Like, I don't like this idea. It is wrong. And you haven't, like, read it or looked at it. You know, like, I always see the religious nuts commenting on anything sort of science-related as like, ha-ha, this is just such bullshit. Everyone knows the Earth is 6,000 years old. Mm. You're all losers. It's like, dude, okay, like, that's just fundamentally wrong. But at the same time, why does it bother you that other people – it's like I always say, for example, this sounds tangential, but it is relevant. I'm more of a Mortal Kombat fan than a grown man should ever be. And they're launching in the build up to the game, launching in like a week and a half. They've been sort of teasing which characters are in it. Mortal Kombat's gotten to a point now where there's like 100 past characters and they don't all appear in every game. So they've been teasing the roster. And there's people, it looks fucking awful. awesome Mortal Kombat 11. And there's people who watch the social media feeds to wait to see who gets announced so they can have a long rant about how it's bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, this is such a waste of a slot. This character sucks. Where's my favorite character? Where's Ermac? This is shit. And it's like, dude, don't buy the game. Like, you can still jawl your old Mortal Kombat games. Just don't buy it if you don't like it. If you've watched the build-up and you've seen the characters get announced one at a time and you think it's the worst roster of all time, fuck off.
So Ben has often said it's bad parenting, but in some cases it's also no parenting, and in some cases it's just complete mental illness.
That can be said of any social media platform, whether it's serious political shit or a video game.
And in the real world where people protest a book like this. Anyway, other stories.
Sorry, just the last point on that. But there's also, these are people who just get paid to create havoc. We see them around election time. The ANC has a budget for this. I'm pretty sure that Gogo and Lotuli House has got like a separate finance section for rebel rousing.
By that Gogo and Lotuli House, you mean Fikile Mbalula?
Yes. It's just, we're running out of time, so I was waiting for the... Yeah, so, I mean, there literally is the rebel rousing petty cash / fund, whatever. And people will say, what are you doing today? Okay, cool. We'll go shout shit at a bookstore. Okay, cool.
It's unemployed people who really, they get a t-shirt or a sandwich. And
they're like paid mourners.
And because they're so unemployed and easy to be hired, it's a result of state capture and thieves like these people.
Yeah, they'd have real jobs. They'd be productive... Yeah. Valuable citizens if they
and
if
access
the
to
was
decent
working.
Education, they'd know that it's bullshit.
DA leader Musi Maimane says public protector Busisiwe Mkhwebane has told him the investigation into the 500,000 rand Bosasa donation to President Cyril Ramaphosa will not be completed anytime soon.
Of course not.
But he's been assured that it is receiving priority.
That's
not
going to
be done anytime soon.
I don't even know what
receiving priority.
I don't even think that's a story. That comes from EWN. What Musi's saying, he's pointing, I'm going to take this to Busisiwe. Then Busisiwe says, it's receiving our highest priority. We only care that, look, Cyril's obviously, like all of the people in the ANC, all of them are implicated in the state capture, which is why they can't turn on each other publicly, because then it'll be a shitstorm of people turning on each other. So Cyril is obviously a bad man. He's not the good man everybody thinks he is.
Mm.
That's kind of clear. Busisiwe Mkhwebane can't go after the president because she didn't go after the last president, if you recall. So she's completely spineless and witless. And then you've got Musi, who's really trying to score cheap political points against Cyril because he reckons Cyril is where he's going to lose votes. I've got bad news for you, Musi. You're going to lose votes from other places because of other things your party's doing. So you need to pay attention.
It's like saying it's going to not happen anytime soon, but it's our highest priority. It's like you going, and the topic of the bizarre duck migrations reported all over the world this week are our highest priority topic for today, but we probably will only get to it next week.
Correct. It's also
what you tell someone who you don't respect or care about.
That's right, exactly. That's like, what you say.
Now we're prioritizizing you, son, later. Yeah.
Okay. Very patronizing.
Okay, fuck off now.
A man has been gunned down in Braunston in what appears to have been a hit. It's understood two armed criminals opened fire on the victim with assault rifles at the Highbury residential complex in Anslow Lane earlier on Tuesday. Gauteng police are now searching for the gunman. Spokesperson Mavela Masondo said that the motive for the murder was unknown. The suspects fled the scene using a blue BMW. The getaway car was later discovered burnt about 5 kilometers away from the crime scene.
And does it say there about whether anything was taken? This is literally just a drive-by.
Yeah. It was a hit. Looks like a hit. So if it was a hit, it might have something to do with politics.
Or gangsterism or corruption or
something.
Same thing, I guess.
Meanwhile, while we're talking about crime, the police minister said he felt vindicated after the Pretoria High Court dismissed the reasons used by former President Jacob Zuma to fire him as National Police Commissioner in 2012. It's taken all this time for Bheki Cele to have his name cleared. He served as National Commissioner under Zuma from July 2009 to 2012, when he was dismissed on the strength of the Molloy Commission of Inquiry, which was chaired by the now late Judge Jake Molloy.
Is there recourse for a person who's been slandered and had their career halted in this way? I wonder.
I think he can sue. I think he's able to sue now. Molloy concluded in 2012 the evidence produced before him proved abundantly that there was a questionable relationship between Bheki Cele, who was on one side, and Shabangu on the other side, and that was public works. Remember, there was an issue around the rental of a building, and Cele immediately took the matter on review, but he's very happy that now, having maintained that the Board of Inquiry was in relation to the procurement of the building leases. Dishonest and irrational, biased, lacked credence, and defied logic. He's now been vindicated. So there we go. Becky Cele in the clear. And unfortunately, this is how slowly the wheels of justice turn. It frustrates people like Ben, who see a murder and he kind of knows who needs to be sent to jail immediately. In this case, it took a long time. And then finally, this Cyclone Idai, they say the death toll's at 847. I saw a horrifying interview with the president of Mozambique where he said, oh, don't believe that's just 1,000 people. He reckons it's close to 100,000.
Wow.
Because Jeez. This country is so poor, they don't know where to start.
Yeah, how do you, right? Where do they get those statistics and compile them and stuff?
I've heard also.
Whose priority when their family's dying as well is to go and report it to the official no longer existing police building?
Have you seen these videos going around of like bodies washing up on the shore that have come down the rivers and then gone out to sea and then they bloat and they roll up onto the shore and explode? And the situation where people have been standing in stagnant water because their house is, you know, knee deep in water, for example, and they develop foot rot.
Oh, dude.
It's just horrendous. This is all happening. And they say hundreds of thousands of people, and this is according to News 24, are in need of food, water, and shelter after Cyclone Idai battered Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and Malawi. As of Monday, at least 847 people had been reportedly killed by the storm, the flooding it caused, and the heavy rains before it hit. So then they give a breakdown of how many people have been affected. 1.85 million people affected by the storm.
That is an incomprehensible number. It's one of those numbers that people say, and you just go, oh, a lot. But like millions of people.
Well, 16,000 households have been displaced.
18,500 people.
In just Zimbabwe. And in Malawi, 19,328 households displaced. People affected, 868,895.
That is a huge surface area.
And in Mozambique, houses damaged or destroyed, 239,682 houses damaged or destroyed.
I mean, I'm aware of the fact that a lot of the listeners will know how many numbers are involved in millions, but just to contextualize, that's enough people to completely fill FNB Stadium, including the field and the stands, 18 and a half times.
Jesus, that's scary. All right, those are the things you need to know. Bitcoin's at $5,243, Ethereum at $181. Over to Ben, and let's find out what's going on in the sport.
Right, Masters Week. We all know what the opening groups are going to be. We all know what the Champions Dinner is. Let's get on to business. Now, the Masters has been going since the 1930s, I think. Long, long time. It was the brainchild of a racist called Clifford Roberts and the greatest golfer at the time, Bobby Jones. The two of them got together, they found this amazing patch of land in Augusta, Georgia, and they said, let's make the greatest golf course in the world to have the greatest golf event in the world. It was the Masters Invitational back then. Then it became known as the Masters. There's been all kinds of traditions over the years, which every year I lovingly bring to you. I'll try to praise you that down because, you know, you can't keep saying the same thing every single year. Obviously, the traditions here, like a lot of things, start at Augusta, like technology-wise. It's just been an incredible add-on to the world of sport, let alone the world of golf. One tradition that is still going really strong, ever since Ben Hogan back in the 50s said, how about we, as smug Masters winners, all have a special club where we have dinner once a year. I know, let's make it before the Masters so we can be extra smug. But I don't mean that in a derogatory sense. Nice, I think it's a great thing to do.
Yeah,
totally. Sure. If I had won the Masters, I'd also be wanting to make traditions purely for people who have won the Masters. It's great. You're part of a very, very exclusive club. And it's one of the coolest things about being great at what you do. You can excel and be in these kind of scenarios. So the Masters club dinner happens on the Tuesday of every single year, where the defending champion basically gets someone to cook up whatever the hell they want. Now, you have obviously different nationalities. There have been a lot of Europeans that have won the Masters, and people from around the world, as far as Fiji with Vijay Singh. A couple of South Africans have won it as well, so this Masters dinner has seen all kinds of fare dished up over the years. This year, Patrick Reed, who no one likes, he had the Caesar salad, a wedge salad, then he had a prime bone-in cowboy ribeye with herb butter for a main, and if you didn't like the meat, then you can have a morning trout. that was the sort of side option there. I don't know what her name was, but still, very, very fitting.
Also, what's a morning trout? Are they like specifically go out and go, right, trouts, who's awake?
A morning
and the ones that are listening to the podcast are like, ah, you guys.
Patrick, I really appreciate your ribeye.
This is an afternoon trout. It's outrageous. Don't think I don't know the difference. I'm a goddamn master. Give me an afternoon trout.
Much so, appreciate your prime cowboy rib, Patrick. I'll have the morning trout, please. Then he had macaroni and cheese and cream spinach as well. And then corn creme brulee and steamed broccoli. Gosh, that's a mouthful. And then for dessert, he had tiramisu, vanilla brown cream bean. This sounds like shit. Got a horrible
sounds
menu.
Like a jewel to me.
I would have had the morning trout and a cup of coffee and called it a day.
Yeah, well, that would be sensible, Ben. But, you know, sometimes you got to indulge.
Well, he brings it home at the end with a praline cheesecake. Okay, fair enough.
I'm pretty sure Gary had his own prepacked meal.
Gary prepacked a meal, and he had spinach and grits, and then he went outside and told everyone how when he first arrived here, he actually walked there. Because he was too poor to actually have a car.
Got across the Atlantic.
Gary walked up Magnolia Lane this year as well, actually. There's a video of him. He's just walking up that awesome driveway. Everyone else is like in cars. There's Gary putting out the big strides. Speaking of Gary, he'll be involved in the Par 3 contest. Another great tradition where they have a Par 3 contest. So Arnold Palmer unfortunately died, so it'll be Jack and Gary. Jack has to suffer Gary all by himself nowadays when they go through this whole thing. And the players all have a lot of fun with this thing. It's not very serious. It's just a great tradition to get the week started. And then we have the opening round on Thursday. So just hugely exciting, really, is because if you look at who's in contention here, Rory McIlroy, the Masters is the only thing in his Grand Slam he hasn't won. So he wins this, the whole thing, wins the Grand Slam, which is all four majors. I don't believe he'll do it this week, though. Unfortunately, the Masters just has a way of really screwing people over. Ernie Els was made for this golf course. He was made to be a Masters champion, and his heart was broken over and over and over. Bit of a cruel mistress, this Augusta layout. So I think the same fate's maybe actually with Rory. Look, the weather is going to be a factor this year before I get into the rest of the fairways. The weather is a factor. It has been pissing down the whole week. Today we'll see some nice sunshine. Of course, it's where all the zombies are in The Walking Dead, so it's very humid there. In The Walking Dead, everyone was very sweaty. Now, Augusta's in the exact same area. So Thursday we'll see less of the sun, but 27 again. Friday is going to be rainy again, but highs are 29. And that will be kind of the weather for the weekend. But the thing about Augusta is that they've got so much money that so if they want the course to be dry, they'll just basically turn off the rain. They have the ability to control whether these people are like gods. And then under the greens, there's like air conditioners and all kinds of other things. So, I mean, they can do whatever the hell they want. If it rains for 3 days, well, I guess they'll just turn it off, as I said. Or they'll just drain the course. They flick a switch and hey, presto, dry. Mm. Yeah. Look, this golf course is actually a fantasy. It doesn't look like this for the whole year. It looks like this for about 2 weeks of the year.
And the rest of the time, it looks like the scenes from The Walking Dead.
It's like a dreadfully done-up woman a lot of the time, like painted on makeup. It's not what you take home, basically. To have a very crass analogy, that's exactly what Augusta is. The azaleas are in bloom, the dogwoods are in bloom. It all looks like this for just probably 2-3 weeks tops the whole year.
Right.
Otherwise, it's under construction the whole time. Really, it's had more work than Donatella Versace. Anyways, let's move off this because we're going to get the rest of the favorites. Now, Justin Rose, world number one, he's my pick to win this. He's finished runner-up twice, all in recent years as well. Tiger Woods, of course, no one knows the golf course like Tiger Woods. No one's been to as many champions dinners in the current field as Tiger Woods. Tiger is so much at this course, but unfortunately a couple of holes have been tightened up over the years. So where Tiger can be a bit loose with his woods, well, he's had to raise it a little bit as well, Gord. Yeah, so especially like a hole like 11, you can't bail out to the right anymore. You're in, well, you know, in Rays Creek, but you're in all those pine needles and the big trees. It's just the course has been made tougher because they didn't want Tiger to win so handsomely. In 1997, he won handsomely. I mean, like Chris Hemsworth handsomely. So
that's pretty damn handsomely.
So they had to curb it back. Otherwise, from a South African standpoint, Lou Estezen's in great form. He is the only bet from the South Africans, of course. You don't win on this course if you're a rookie. I think only three times in the history of the entire event. Bear in mind the first time, obviously, a rookie won because it was the first time. You've got to have course experience here. The fairways are huge. You're always in play, but the greens are where this thing is won and lost. So that's why a guy like Jordan Spieth, who doesn't always hit it that great, he's won it. But he obviously has melted down hugely. Anyway, so money on Justin Rose. Dark horse, I would say, outside betting, go for Gary Woodland. He hits the ball long. The guy did it right last year in the big tournaments. He's my dark horse bet. Last night in the Champions League, there was joy for Spurs. They beat Man City at home. Son Heung-min, he decided to just chase and chase and chase a ball, which all of Man City thought was out. He then turned it around and banged it in the net. And with that, Spurs go 1-0 up. Of course, they will win. They will lose the next leg 4-0, which is inevitable, essentially, when they go to Man City. So, but, you know, Spurs can enjoy this for what it was. Harry Kane looks like he could be out for the rest of the season, though. He clattered into a Man City player, and his ankle is now screwed. Other results, Liverpool, they beat Porto 2-0. Could have been more, but that's enough. At home, looking very, very sharp. Tonight, you will see Ajax versus Juventus, Man United versus Barcelona, and I will give credit to Supersport. They finally have the split-screen technology, so you can have both of those games going on there, and you can see what's going on throughout.
Just have to really focus on which the commentator is talking about which game, because that could throw you badly.
So the commentators pick a game, that's where you get the audio from, but still, it is very good. It's innovation, and we all love innovations. Speaking of which, yeah, I don't want to go much more into the football. I think that's enough.
Yeah,
of course. That's enough.
No, golf's way better.
Yeah, all spotted. Speaking of innovation of things, Super Rugby and Sanzar Rugby Championship, all these kind of things, they're looking to maybe shake things up even further. So how these things work is that they basically work from TV deal to TV deal. So every time there's a new TV deal, in order to get their, what they believe, their mandatory 16% increase, they need to promise really incredible things. So they got to just kind of, you know, it's like seducing your next sort of date or partner, really. You got to go in there, say, look, we've done this, I'm this, but I'm going to do this.
Apologize profusely and give disclaimers about your shortcomings so that no one's later unpleasantly surprised.
Yeah, exactly. So what they want to do for 2021 season is go back to the round robin thing, because absolutely zero people love the conference system. Nobody asked for it, nobody liked it, it somehow just appeared. It was just dreadful, it was stupid, and I still think Sanzar owes a public apology for how shit it was. Literally, get out there and just say, this is terrible, dreadful, just dreadful. So they're going back to the round robin system. They're throwing away the Sun Wolves, who've offered absolutely nothing to this tournament. But they're also thinking, what if we get a player pool of marquee players and then we can scatter them across the other teams? Sounds like bullshit, you think. But all other big teams, right? What if there was like a Super Rugby auction? Okay, I'm going on a bit of a limb here. What if the top players in Super Rugby were then auctioned off, that every team had a chance to buy them? Now, money across the Southern Hemisphere nations is pretty similar, really.
Yeah.
So it's not like in France or England where they'll just get the best players. Now, people always go, well, then the Box don't get to play with other Box throughout the season, and the same for the All Blacks and the Wallabies. But yeah, bollocks to that. This thing needs to live and needs to survive and thrive and all this kind of stuff. So it'd be pretty cool if, like, Beauden Barrett was up for auction and then, like, the Sharks were to buy him.
Right.
Or, you know, you get more international flair and more players spread around. So it isn't just the New Zealand derby that you want to watch on the weekend. Plus, you're going to get different skill sets coming into different teams, different sort of setups. And that'll only be a good thing as well, because now you're trading skills. I think that's a cool move. Whether it's going to happen or not, everybody knows. But at least these guys are thinking better things. That's entertaining, right? That'll get people talking. That'll get people giving a toss about their teams again. Imagine if you're like, I don't know, the Lions right now. You're so tired of your players. Hey, next year we get to have like
some new ones.
Three great New Zealanders. And go watch that shit. Imagine Sonny Bill Williams spends like a season at the Stormers.
And it's not like you're not going to see the countries take each other on in the big derbies. That's still going to happen.
Yeah, and that idea that like it's the club stuff is in service of the national stuff. It's like they're separate issues.
Yeah, it should be. Yeah, again, football's way ahead of all these different things. Let's go with what football does sometimes.
All right.
Not the play acting, not the other bitchiness, all the talking back to the ref, but they've got some really good things in there. And then the Rugby Championship, perhaps they're going to have these midweek tests. You know, like in the old days of tours, you would have the midweek team playing against a club or provincial team, and then the test team plays on the Saturday. So now they're looking to maybe implement that as well. All actually not cuck ideas. Yeah. You know, you've been so used to Sanzar basically giving us shit ideas for so long.
Yeah.
Now, maybe they've had a change of personnel. All their conscience caught up with them. Either way, more sport on Friday. I'm not here on Friday.
Oh, that's right.
Well, just watch the Masters. That's all I've got to say. Just watch the Masters. What are you going to be doing? And tonight, Juventus versus... should I have it? It's gone now. They're playing Ajax.
Ajax, yeah.
Yeah. United, and then Barcelona. Man United are going to lose to Barcelona.
What you said about PSG.
And Gordon's going to have a cry.
I will be upset if we
Gord,
lose.
I'm jinxing it in your favor.
Oh, thank you.
This is what friends do.
Thanks, Pat.
All right, everybody.
Well, that's why you're negative about things. Thanks, Ben.
Ben isn't negative. He is cynical.
Curmudgeonly.
Well, those are not bad things.
Informed. All the same WhatsApp group.
Okay. So on the way, we've got lots of stuff. We've got Riaz Mulla, who will be joining us. I met Riaz on a trip to Silicon Valley. He is the CEO and founder of a business called Hyperion Dev. And they're actually launching a competition. Listen to this. They're doing a tuition-free six-month on-site coding boot camp program for anyone in the Western Cape who's keen. Doesn't that sound like something that you should be doing if you want to be part of the future economy?
Yes. Yeah. Coding is huge.
So, good money in it, too.
So we'll find out from Riaz what that's all about. We're also going to speak to Hobbo, who Ben has been following around for a while. How long have you been
following this guy around? Am I a stalker?
You've been documenting his journey.
I created a video series around him for his Biogen journey, and it's been a huge, huge journey for him. Life-changing, like legit life-changing. And he'll be here today to talk about it.
Great. I look forward to hearing from Hobbo later on.
He's running here from where he lives.
Well, we'll see about that. All of that and more on the way. Gord is with us, and you are with us. That's all that matters. And we'll start your morning properly.
This is CliffCentral.com.